Our God is a missionary God, and we are His missionary people. You're listening to The Sent Life, the official podcast of the Center for Great Commission Studies at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary.
Week after week, we talk about life to the mission field, and today we'll hear a story about life from the mission field. We've got in our Sent Life studios an IMB missionary. We want to talk a little bit about the work that's taking place around the world. So welcome to the Sent Life. Hey, Keelan, what's up?
How's it going, Scott?
Good. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, man. Semester is rocking along. I think things are going well.
Good. How's life at the cookhouse?
It's going well. It's going well. Some of the busy of the beginning of the semester is starting to dissipate. And so that's nice. But I think we're getting ready to ramp up for spring break and some of those kind of things as well. So we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see how it goes.
You're living with a published author now?
Yeah. That's real. That's real. So Meredith's book is now out officially. It's a, for those of you who haven't heard this episode yet, it's actually a board book that she wrote for children and for, you know, parents of small kids about missionaries. So we're really excited about it. We hope it does well.
One of my favorite new books.
There you go. It's one of my favorites, too. I've read it multiple times at this point to my children. So.
And you're actually in the book. There's a little picture of you stuck in there holding your kids' hands.
That's right. That's right. So there's an Easter egg in there of me holding my two little kids' hands in the map. In fact, if you get a copy of the book, you may be able to point it out and let me know if you find it.
That'd be great. Hey, so today's an exciting day.
Indeed. I'm really excited about what we're doing today. So here at Southeastern, we benefit from having sent so many people to the field who were students here, the churches in the area around here, send so many people to the field that we kind of have a revolving door, so to speak, of field personnel who do their stateside assignment here near the seminary.
Right.
And today we have one such field personnel in the studio with us. His name is George Watts, in fact. And George is staying stateside here in the Raleigh area, and we have an opportunity to spend some time chatting with him.
Excited to have George here. So George and I were together in Thailand.
Okay.
Had a grand experience. You know those little fish tanks that you walk down the road and you're supposed to stick your feet in there?
Yes, I do.
And those are the most torturous as those little fish swirl around and eat the dead skin from your feet. So George and I sat next to one another in absolute torture one time in the middle of Thailand.
That's true. Thanks, you guys, for having me. Happy to be here. And I will never forget that time. It was excruciating.
It was terrible. Don't ever do that. So, hey, tell us real quick about yourself, what you guys have been up to. So you graduated 8 or 9 years ago, right? Or left here 8 or 9 years ago?
Yeah, we left here 2018, I believe.
Okay.
And, so my wife, Allison, and I, and then now we have two kids. We're over serving in Europe, working along with the diaspora of NAME, North African Middle Eastern peoples.
Very good. So tell us a little bit about what you guys are doing and your journey to the field and, you know, kind of that little bit of information.
Yeah. So it's actually been a lot different than most people.
Okay.
So we went to the field to North Africa, actually. Mm-hmm. We spent a whole term there, 3 years.
Okay.
And we did that to learn language and culture.
Okay.
All for the purpose to then turn around, go into Europe, and learn language and culture again.
Wow.
So that we could reach the masses of North African Middle Eastern peoples coming into Europe from places that we don't normally have access to.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, so this is one of the things I really like about y'all's story. So you have this we talk all the time, right, about having to learn a language and a culture to be able to engage in missions work. And we talk all the time about diaspora work and this the fact that we've got peoples from some of the harder to reach places who are landing in what might be historically easier to access places and the opportunity that creates. But I don't think a lot of people realize that if you, say, move to Europe to engage somebody from North Africa or the Middle East in missions there, that doesn't mean you as an American need to learn one language and culture. It actually means you need to learn two languages and cultures just so that you can be engaged in the work in that particular setting.
Yeah, we often hear stories about missionaries who go to one country and for whatever reason have to leave that country.
That's right.
So they get kicked out or transition out of the work and they go to a second country and learn a second language. But you guys were a little different. I mean, you knew that eventually you would end up in Europe working with North African peoples, and your first step wasn't to go to Europe, it was to go to North Africa.
That's
so
right.
This real focus on, you know, the significance and the importance of understanding the culture, the language, the worldview of a people. Talk with us a little bit about what you understand is the kind of the strategy, the philosophy for that level of intensity when it comes to, you know, engaging what is a mission field in Europe.
Yeah. I mean, the reality is if you take out our first term and you just send us straight to Europe to reach these people, we'd be far less effective.
Wow.
Because we're missing culture, and then what we're likely missing language at that point too.
Sure.
And so that first term really was where God laid this his love for these people onto our hearts. And then we began to see how their culture and their language, its importance in their life, so that when we went to Europe and turned around and did all this stuff again, like when we're talking with these people, we have a different connection with them, because it's like they feel just a little bit more like we're closer to what their family was.
Sure. When you've got that shared experience, you can say, hey, we actually lived for a season in North Africa as well. And so we love having an opportunity to connect and meet those people from that area. And so it endears you, I would assume.
It does.
And this is not the same. But so when I was on the field, I was serving in West Africa. And when I was in West Africa, it was, of course, a former French colony. Mm-hmm. And the official language of the country was French.
Mm-hmm.
And a number of the mission agencies there where the personnel would land, and they'd land in the capital city, and you can totally get by in French. But the work happens best in the local African languages, the people that you're working with there. And that was a differentiator in the way that we dealt with stuff is, hey, let's learn the African language. And a number of personnel would land and just learn French and would, you know, talk about how it'd be nice to know the other language, but we seem to be passably getting by in French. And the level of depth to the relationships that developed, you could tell a difference.
For sure.
And I would assume it's even more so working in a diaspora context like yours.
Yeah. And it's actually really unusual in that you now have kind of this third culture.
Right.
So you need both cultures and both languages to understand both sides of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're somewhere mixed in the middle, right? And so, yeah, what your point to the need to learn their language, it's, you know, we refer to it as their heart language.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I can speak to somebody in English, but they're having to process like, what does he mean by this? What does he mean by this?
Yeah.
But if I'm speaking their heart language, they're not focused on the words I'm saying. They're focused on what I'm telling them, and in this case, like the gospel.
That's a good way to put it.
So, yeah, it's really tempting to want to shortcut that process, to think that if I can speak English or if I can just work in a lingua franca, then, you know, that's the easiest way forward.
Right.
But when we think about the missionary task, which is to make disciples of all nations, and that is leading people to understand who Jesus is, to place their faith in Jesus, to understand the difference between whatever their religion, their worldview, to understand what it means to be Christian, all that needs to go at a different level, to your point. Not that we're dealing in, you know, a second and third language as much as possible, right? We have to do that sometimes.
Sure, right.
But we don't want to intentionally shortcut the process. We want to shoot for the most effective missionary process so that we can fulfill the Great Commission. So that's I think it's a great point that you're making.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, you speak about the temptation to shortcut, right? So like, I think it might be helpful for us to think through some of the justifications that are often used for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's a bit of an intellectual exercise here. I think the one that I'm most maybe sympathetic to is the urgency of the task that sits in front of us when we're doing international missions, right? Particularly with those people that are unreached or unengaged with the gospel, there's this need, this realization of the urgency of the task that's sitting in front of us to be able to get the gospel to these people. And I think that might be a temptation for well-meaning folk who feel the need to go overseas to say, well, maybe I need to skip this first 1, 2, 3 years of language learning in order to engage directly in the task.
Right.
And so I'm sympathetic to that.
Yep.
I'm not convinced by it, but I'm sympathetic to it.
Yep. So how would you respond to that as a guy who has gone the extra mile to learn two languages? How do we respond to the excuse or, you know, the statement, man, the need is too great? You know, Jesus is coming back. I need to just quickly get out there and start telling in whatever, however I can do it. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think the reality is, it's where is your focus? Mm. So if my focus is largely on me, I tend to be short-sighted. The task is great, and there is an urgency, but our God is bigger than this task. Our God is bigger than time, and he doesn't actually need me, right? So if I turn to this eternal focus, it's how is God asking me to be equipped? How is he equipping me to be best used by him? So it's really switching from that, like, I need to save people. Wait, I don't save people.
Yeah.
To how can I best reach this culture with this language that I'm learning?
Yeah, that's good. So I hear from students all the time when we talk about learning language in cross-cultural communication, I can't learn a language, I can't do this. So there's this self-deprecation or this feeling that, you know, I can't do that. Now, I know you guys are, I mean, you're not dummies, but there's no way you would have thought, man, I need to become fluent in two completely different languages.
Right.
So there has to be some maybe personal doubt in the beginning. How do you respond to this self-deprecating, I can't learn two languages, or I can't learn a language well enough to be a missionary?
Yeah. I mean, I'm just going to keep going back to this. It's that reliance on the Lord. Like, what is the Lord asking me to do? Right. So, yes, you have this battle on your mind. How am I going to do this task? Well, this task is too big for me. This language is too big for me. I'm not a particularly gifted language learner. But if God's saying go, he's going to equip me. Any good thing in me is the Lord anyway.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah, no, that's real good. And I think another justification I often hear, and you've already spoken to this some, but I feel like it's worth raising, right, is this idea that technology has now made it to where I don't have to learn the language. I can just pull out my phone and use Google Translate or something to that effect, and should be able to passably get through a conversation with some meaning. And so if that's the case, maybe I only need to learn enough language to like get by living there so I can get my taxi driver directions or something. But I should be able to use, you know, technology or different tools to do the translation for me. How do we deal with that one?
I mean, yeah, to me, that's just like, here's another shortcut. Because when you're talking to somebody about the gospel and you're getting into it and you're starting to tell a story, you're like, wait, listen to this robot real quick to hear the importance,
hear the
emotion in me. Well, they don't hear the emotion in the reality. And when you're talking to somebody and you're looking them in the eye, they're seeing the emotion, the reality of Christ changing your heart is one thing. But when they're staring at a screen as you're maybe talking and they aren't paying attention to you, it really muddies the water and it makes it difficult to share. And this is coming from as you're growing in language and we have these tools, you do lean on them.
Sure.
And I can tell you there is a big difference from at the beginning when I'm using a phone to when I can just talk to them.
Yeah. At some point you communicate to someone, God is a foreigner to you. If you are unwilling to learn a language and you're unwilling to, you can only get to God through this phone, as opposed to the biblical image, God as an immanent being who is with us, who hears us when we pray, who understands us when we pray. I'll never forget the first time that I had the opportunity to lead a guy to Christ who was from a Muslim background. And when I talked to him a little bit about, you know, why, what was the attraction? And he said, for the first time in my life, I realized that God spoke my language too. Because, you know, he had grown up in a worldview and a religion where God only spoke through Arabic, through the Quran, and for him to hear from God, you know, he felt always distant. Hey, you know, the imam can read the Arabic to me, but if I'm going to do it, they keep telling me this isn't the word of God to you. And so when we're able to say, no, God, this is who God is, to him it just resonated that, no, if the God of the universe created me and created the world and loves me, then he can speak my language. But if we lean on technology and if we lean into a third or fourth language and we're requiring people to jump through hoops, we miscommunicate a person, the character of God.
Yeah, you know, it's fascinating. The story you tell there reminds me of a similar situation that I had on the field. So again, I was in a Muslim context as well, and the significance, this is tangentially related, the significance of what happened when we were finally able to get a translation of the scriptures in the language of the people that we were working with, not in French, but in the actual language of the people that we were working with, the change that that made in spiritual formation, in evangelism, the whole deal, because of a similar idea there, right? Like God speaks my language and these words are available to me in my language. And of course, our own learning of the language does something really similar when we're communicating with people. So I think that's an important thing for us to consider is the value of spending time on the front end of a term really learning well the language and the culture of those that you're trying to engage. There's not really an end run way or a fast track way around that if what we're after is a lifetime of faithful ministry that's instead of just a moment of ministry.
And actually, to both your points, it's as you're going to share with somebody, it's not like life is just like I just do one-off shares with people. No, most likely you're going to a warm culture. Warm culture meaning that they're very communal, that you know it's all about the family and the community. Also, it means relationship is important. So if I walk up to somebody with a phone and have something translated – they're not very likely to give me the time of day.
Good point.
But if I, as a foreigner, have spent time learning their culture and their language, it's night and day how they treat you.
That's right. It demonstrates value, right?
Value of the person. So let's talk a minute. So you guys serve with our International Mission Board.
That's right.
One of the things I think that you make a point is that, you know, the IMB values, prioritizes learning a language. So it's not like you went and said, I'm going to do this of my own dreaming it up. I mean, this was an expectation because of the IMB's vision for the world. Talk a little bit about our International Mission Board, the emphasis, the priority they put on language learning, the study of culture as an integral part of the missionary task.
Yeah, I actually am very thankful. I see other organizations that are doing great work around the world, but just in my understanding of the IMB, just their importance on language and culture. Yeah. So when you go, it is known. You're learning this language. You're going to reach this level, and we will do everything in our power to get you to that level, no matter where you are in your abilities. And yeah, so they're, I mean, they're funding you to do that, and they're putting you in healthy places with coaches and teachers so that you can be most effective.
Yeah, I think that's it's fascinating, right? Because we often think about the cooperative program funding missionaries, and we think it's funding things like Bibles and tracts, and which it does.
Yeah,
but the primary missionary tool is the missionary.
That's right.
And Southern Baptists have prioritized, we want to spend money to make sure that our missionaries are as thoroughly equipped as possible so that they are the primary tool in missions.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's one of the benefits. To, and I mean, you've said it. I think, Scott, you and I have been sitting here echoing the idea. Like, there is, not to downplay some of the other organizations, you're right, but I think one of the things I left my service with the board with was a redoubling of the significance and importance of a philosophy that says that first time, that first season you have on the field, let's use it to make the next 10, 15, 20 years really good ministry. And so let's develop you into the kind of missionary that's able to effectively engage the culture and the language that you're working with. So, yeah, that's super helpful.
So one of the things that when we think about our listeners, the majority of the people who listen to us, at least in the States, are those who are sending missionaries, raising them up, preaching sermons to call people to be missionaries, their mission pastors who are organizing. What kind of coaching or what kind of encouragement do you have for our stateside partners who are working with potential missionaries, those who are going to field, to prepare people for this expectation of learning the language and making that a priority?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because I think as we prepared to go, and we did have good people around us helping us out, something that was kind of missed is this idea of like, where are our expectations lying? Okay, I think most people who are ready to go are like, I'm going to get to the field, boom, ministry immediately. Yeah. Day one, I'm planning church in about 6 months, you know, but that is not usually the reality. And so I think if you are helping your missionaries or those who are about to go out as missionaries, set expectations of, hey, this first term is largely going to be preparation and pruning and just pouring yourself into language, and ministry may be close to non-existent or it's just kind of sparse throughout your time. And I think just having that in front of you and knowing that, like, it will be hard. Mm-hmm. You're going to be culture shocking. You're going to be having to embarrass yourself as you go try to speak the language.
Right. That's right.
But it's all worth it. Right. And so setting that. And I think one other big thing is, how do we move from this self-focused comparison? Because when you get on the field, if or the reality of when you meet somebody that is more advanced in the language or a better language learner, how do you deal with that?
Yeah.
Okay. So how do we deal with that? Well, it's again putting that eternal focus on life. Mm. If my spouse or my team has a language win, that's a win for me too.
Yeah,
because
good.
As a team, it's not about how many seeds have I planted that God grew to save. No, He's placed us there as a team. If any seeds get planted to where people are saved, to where God is glorified, that is a win as a team. That is a win for all of us. And so that, I think, is one of the biggest things, is helping set expectation, but also trying to the best of your ability, stop people from comparing.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
So it seems like one of the things we could that would help new missionaries when they get to the field, you make a great point of preparing. Let people know this is what's to expect.
Right.
But the other is to remind our churches what to expect. I think sometimes our church members are well-intentioned. They ask the wrong question.
Yeah, right? This is a really good point,
it's
Scott.
It's like, so, hey, how many people have you shared Christ with this week? Or have you guys planted a church yet? And it's almost like your supporters, your sending churches kind of disappointed. They're ashamed of you.
Right.
When you're really doing what you need to do to be better. So it's like this slingshot, right? You're pulling the thing back in order to let it go. But the pulling back takes a year or more.
Right.
It's that first year when the church is most involved with you.
After that,
they kind of forget. They don't write you, right? So that first year, they're writing you. And it's like, hey, we're really, you know, and you don't have the cool stories. And so they're asking the wrong questions. And, man, it just gets things out of balance. And so preparing our people to say, let's ask these questions. Tell us some cool words you've learned, or what are some stories you've got about making mistakes in the language, or, you know, what have you learned about the culture? Asking those questions the first year or so, encourage those that we send. And then in 18 months or 2 years, then we can start hearing stories about people who that we've shared the gospel with, the neighborhoods that we're reaching, the volunteer teams we're having come in. But we want to ask that, as you said, you get off the plane, have you planted a church yet? And we're like, actually, I just get up and go to school every morning. I meet with my language tutor for 5 hours and walk through the market and trying to figure out how to name fruits and vegetables, right?
Yeah, no, so I think that's a very valuable insight. So if you're listening and you're in a situation where you are a ministry leader and you have a kind of a group of influence here, maybe that's in your local church or maybe you're in a denominational role or something. So how do we help set the expectations of those that are going to that first season, particularly if you're going with the International Mission Board and the philosophy that they have of ministry, that first season is a preparation season.
Yep. Okay.
And then how do we set the expectations of those that are doing the sending? Maybe we as pastors in churches do a better job of communicating, hey, here's the stuff that your missionary will be engaging in this first couple of years.
Yeah.
So let's think about the questions we'd ask them, to your point, Scott, so that those questions are ones that would be an encouragement to them and are hitting more at the target of what they're actually aiming for in this first season of preparation.
That's good. Man, George, we're so glad you're here. Welcome back. Glad you
Thank
guys.
You.
We're so proud of you. You know, we're excited to send you guys out, celebrate your journey, and glad you guys are back with us, sharing with our students on campus. I want to give you a chance, kind of one last, what would you say to supporters, potential missionaries, those who are sending, just kind of a word from the field, life from the field. You know, this is an opportunity for you just kind of speak that. So we'll give you kind of the parting word, and then Keelan will shut us down.
Yeah, and again, I appreciate you guys inviting me on. And I think as I think about the grandness of the task, He is calling us to go out or to be sending those to go out. And so as whoever's listening, as you're thinking through these things, like, how is it that we are following the Lord in that task? How is it that we are sending out? If you're from a small church, how are you sending out somebody and how are you supporting them? I think the reality is, and we were just talking about this, is people are forgotten in the first year. And in some cases, they're forgotten within the first month. And we need support.
Yeah.
And because we're away from family. We're away from community. We're learning to kind of be in this new culture and this new language. And guess who's right there to discourage us? The enemy. So who do we need? We need the body to hold us up. So would you continue to hold us up, continue to support us as you do? We greatly appreciate it. And we're just happy to be back around everybody and in the land of the Lord. Okay, the whole world is the Lord's, but it's good to be home for a bit.
Sure. Well, George, thanks so much for your time with us today. And I hope this has been a benefit for those of you who are listening. If you've got any questions about this, you can always reach out to us at cgcs@sebts.edu. That's the email address, or you can find us on our website at thecgcs.org. Thanks again for listening. Of course, share this with others if you feel like it would be a benefit. You can find us wherever you find your podcasts. And until next time, this is The Sent Life.
Southeastern wants you to be equipped to serve the church and fulfill the Great Commission. That's why we offer our Master of Divinity degree, which provides rigorous biblical and theological training for your current and future ministries. Our Master of Divinity offers broad ministerial training while facilitating a deep engagement with the Bible, all within a textual community that focuses on spiritual formation and ministry preparation. Come be shaped as a Great Commission Christian and experience theological education to the fullest. Visit sebts.edu/MDiv to learn more.